There we go. Okay. Good morning. Good to see you today, this morning, on this Sunday. Glad to have you here. As everybody takes their seats, we'll give everybody a moment here. And good morning, Joel. Nice to see you. Are you all over it? I hope.
We'll see.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. They've been in and out with just, Yeah. Amen. All right. Let's see. As we start this morning, who's got the microphone? Does anybody? Nate's got the mic. Nate, would you lead us in an opening prayer?
Sure.
Okay.
Lord, as we gather here today on this beautiful day that you've created, let us take this time to listen to the lesson given to us today from the teacher, and to be able to have it prick our heart, to be able to listen to what your lessons give to us, to be able to grow as your sons and your daughters, Lord. Take this time to thank you for each other here today. As we know that being able to gather as your sons and your daughters helps all of us, Lord. Lord, we thank you again for the lesson that we're about to partake in. Most importantly, we thank you for your son, Jesus Christ. It's in his name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Okay, we continue in the study of the book of Genesis, and we're right in the middle of looking at the lives of Isaac and Jacob and all those that were related to them. Spent some time with Abraham. These are fundamental characters in the Old Testament, and a lot of the principles in the New Testament are built upon some of the actions of these guys back here, whether they were faithful or unfaithful. We have here a character we've been looking at here, Esau, and his situation currently is he is crying at the results of what has happened, because he really despised his birthright, didn't care so much for it, and now his blessing has been taken away. You really can't justify Jacob and how he took the blessing from Esau, but we do understand that this was something that God had arranged, that it would be the second son, it would be Jacob, who was going to be blessed and be the one who carried down, would have the possessions of the time and would have the first right or the first place in the family, and would also have the blessing of all the nations would have a blessing through him. And so as we look at these things, there's so many things we can learn that are important for us in a very practical way today. Having confidence in God, depending upon him in the trials that come, waiting on the Lord to bring us blessings, like Abraham waited so long to have a son or to have children. And so these things are just so important. But we're going to pop right in where we left off here with, if you remember, Jacob came in and deceitfully pretended to be Esau, and Isaac blessed him with the blessings the firstborn was supposed to have. And so he's been blessed, and he's left, and Esau came in and surprised Isaac, thinking that, hey, I'd already blessed you. But of course he hadn't. And we see here in verse, we left off here about chapter 27, verse 36 or so, and see the result here. And Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright. And now look, he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And so we'll see here in just a bit what that blessing is. But we did make comment about this passage in Romans, that this is not a surprise to God. In fact, this is the way God intended for things to happen, that because of, well, we read in other places that Esau despised his birthright. But let's read again here in Romans 9, verse 10. The purpose of God is being fulfilled here, even if the way it's being done wasn't a pleasing to God. Okay, Romans 9, verse 10. But when Rebekah also had conceived by one man, even by our father Isaac, For the children not yet being born, nor having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him who calls, it was said to her, the older shall serve the younger. Now, somebody asked the question last week after class, do you think that Rebecca told everybody back when we read that, when she went to God and said, look, these babies are struggling inside me, what's the deal? And God said, well, this is the thing, the older shall serve the younger. I would have thought she would have shared that with Isaac and with others, but maybe not, who knows? But she knows this is the way it's going to be. And then also here in verse 13, as it is written, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated. Now don't put too much into that. He basically preferred Jacob is what this is. This is the one he's choosing. He's not choosing the one that would normally be the one that would have the birthright and the blessing. And the reason it says he has done that is because I can choose who I can choose. You know, I have a reason for this, and this is the way we're going to do it. So the firstborn is not going to be the one to carry on the privileges of the firstborn. Okay. So moving on, let's see what Isaac has to say as far as a blessing for Esau. Verse 39, then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass when you become restless that you shall break his yoke from your neck. So here's Esau, who's going to basically be in a position of servitude as far as he's not the head now. It's going to be Jacob. And then we see out through another, about 700-800 years, that Edom, which is also another name for Esau, the nation of Edom, is subjective to the nation of Judah. But it says here that that's going to stop at a certain time. If we look over to 2 Kings, about 800 years later, divided kingdoms will, whenever we get into that study sometime down the road and between Judah and Israel, we've got during actually the reign of Joram, who was king of Israel at the time, says in his days, Edom, this is Esau's lineage now, revolted against Judah's authority and made a king over themselves. So for many years now, or many years before this, basically they were just in subjection to Jacob's family. And then again in the next verse 22, thus Edom has been in revolt against Judah's authority to this day, and Libnah revolted at that time. So just going ahead and just seeing that this is going to be fulfilled later on, that you're going to be in subjection, but then you're going to revolt at some time and not be under their authority. And it says until this day, probably Jeremiah wrote 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, so likely he said till the time of Jeremiah anyway is what we're looking at. Anyway, okay, going on. So he does get a blessing, but it's nothing like, of course, what Jacob has. In verse 41, so Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother, Jacob. I heard somebody say something. Did somebody have a hand? Then I will kill my brother Jacob. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. We've heard her say that before when she said, go in and steal the blessing. Obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away. It gives you a little idea about Esau again here. Esau was a certain kind of a person that he didn't respect the birthright. He went off and married foreign women. That wasn't something pleasing to his parents. He obviously had a hot temper that after a little while would cool down. And, you know, he said, go for a few days. So her intention was that he could leave for a little bit, and after a while, he'll cool down. So that's what she's desiring here. Turns away until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. So, yeah, didn't keep a thought in his head too long, I guess. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day? referring to, I think, her husband, who at this time, they didn't think he was going to live long. He was blind. And so, she's saying, I don't want to lose my husband and one of my children so close together. So you get out of town, so you're not going to get killed by Esau, your brother. Now we did talk about, and we could actually put a chart up, but I think we've done before, is that Isaac actually lives another 40 years. So for some reason, they were thinking he was going to pass away. He was that feeble, apparently, at this time. Maybe he got better. Okay. Here's an important verse. And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be now? How important is it for our children to marry well and to marry in the faith? And I think this is just one example of when here at this time, here, got you just a second. Yeah, okay. Did you want to comment on something before this verse? Okay, go ahead, Dorothy.
I'm kind of curious. I mean, as parents, when we make mistakes or do something wrong, we usually correct it with our kids. Why would you suppose that Rebekah would not look at Esau and say, I'm the one that sent him in? It wasn't Jacob's fault.
Ah, yes. In fact, well, that's true. But at the same time, Jacob agreed. So even though it was her idea, and she says, look, obey me, go in and do this, and we'll dress you up and make you look like your brother. He could have said, no, Mom, I'm not going to do that. that's not right. But so, yeah, they split. You basically say they split the responsibility. But yeah, right. Basically, she's obviously very much the one who instigated it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why that's the case. Billy back there has got a comment. Let me go back here a bit, if that's what we're going to do.
It's interesting because Jacob deceived his father, beat his brother out of his inheritance, and now his mother is going to send him away, and he is going to be schooled properly in how to deceive someone and all those things. So.
We got to wait till we get to that part. We'll talk about that.
But he,
you're looking ahead, aren't you?
As the old expression goes, he did get his.
Yeah, he's going to get his. He's going to get a little bit of his own type of deception here. And boy, in a big way, too. We'll see that in just a little bit. Okay. No more hands for now. So yeah, anyway, I'm saying here is that this is something that makes a big difference in people's lives, is that okay, if your children are married to people that are just drag them down and drag the family down, it's a hard thing. Again, we don't have any young people ready to get married in here, so that would be a better thing for them to study this one in their classes. But this isn't something that was important. Obviously, it was something that had a great issue for Rebekah here. Okay. Moving on, then, chapter 28, a wife for Jacob. And actually not a wife, we find out, a wives for Jacob. But she didn't think that's what was going to happen, but that's what does happen. Okay, Genesis 28, verse 1 through 4. And you're going to see on some of these things, like I said, we're getting to a point in Genesis where there's a lot of narrative that we're just going to follow a storyline, and there's not a lot we're going to be, we'll stop and talk about the things that have some import or some interest in them and some application. Obviously, whenever you want to bring up something, we can do that. Okay, going on to 28 verse 1, we got, then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. So he's in agreement with with Rebekah, but for a different reason. She wants him to head out of town because they want to get him killed. And here Isaac is saying, we don't want you to be marrying the local worldly Canaanite women here. We want to send you back. Just like Abraham did, this is kind of, a lot of what happens with Isaac and Jacob is similar to Abraham and Isaac. So he said, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padanaram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. And we'll look at a little chart in a bit to see just the connections again. But same thing again, go back to where we came from. And go to these people who have a better connection with God or have a connection with Jehovah, where the Canaanites don't. And he says, may God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples and give you the blessing of Abraham and to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. We see this promise repeated again and again through Abraham's life, Isaac's life, Jacob's life, just reinforcing God has promised something, and we're going to see historically he fulfills it exactly the way he's promised it. These blessings that he's going to give to Abraham's children. Okay, verse 5. So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take a wife from there, and that he blessed, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. You think he's old enough by now to learn some of these things before he makes these terrible decisions to marry Canaanite wives. But he's noticing, hey, this really makes my parents happy that he marries somebody that's not from the land around here. Also, Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebojoth, we don't know about her so much, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. So he had two Hittite women for wives now, Canaanite nations in Canaan. And now he's going to his uncle, basically, and looking at the children he's had. And here's this gal, Mahalath. Now you would think that Ishmael, who's Abraham's son, is going to be godly, worshiping Jehovah. We don't know really exactly at this time how godly or ungodly he is, because none of the context just doesn't follow him. But you would assume he would be obviously much more godly than the Canaanites around, right? Kind of wonder, why didn't Abraham or Isaac send their sons, or let's see, not, it wouldn't be Abraham, but why Isaac didn't choose a wife from his would have been his uncle. Yeah, okay. No, his brother. Brother's family, right? Brother. Isaac and Ishmael. It gets complicated. But there's a reason. Who knows why that happened? But, you know, this is closer to what would be good than... Yeah, go ahead. He's got a microphone.
Remember the plan...
He's already wired.
Remember the plan was initiated by Rebecca. And Rebecca was from the clan back in, at Laban. So I mean, she wouldn't be inclined to send anybody to Ishmael.
No.
She would be inclined to send someone
back to their family, right. Which, again, was originally what God wanted for Abraham. So I think this is God's plan overall.
Yeah. And we look at that and we think, and there's these problems that are introduced by the wives that they select. In this case, the whole strife between Esau and Jacob was magnified by Rebekah's actions. Mm-hmm. And yet there were aspects about Jacob marrying one of the Canaanite women that just absolutely deplored, her. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, it was the lesser of two evils, really, in mm-hmm. one way. Yeah.
Yeah, but it looks like Esau's being more careful now, for whatever reason. He's seeing that he's displeased his parents by the conduct that his wives have. Mike.
So could there have been bad blood between Ishmael and Isaac? I mean, things were kind of rough there, right? When Isaac was small,
right? At least between their parents, right?
Well, that Ishmael he did something to his little brother that didn't please Sarah very much. She really got angry when she saw
when they were young
him mocking. And secondly, I mean, they knew where he was, right? Yeah. They knew where Ishmael was, and I don't know if there's any interaction between them at all, but could they have known a little bit about Ishmael's spiritual condition? Maybe, I mean, it's speculation, yeah. I'm saying.
Well,
but
remember, he did show up for Abraham's funeral, or for his,
that's right.
When they so buried they, it, for his burial.
Yeah.
So there was still connection there.
So they maybe they knew a little bit about Ishmael that, yeah. that didn't please. Just a thought, mm-hmm. we don't know for sure.
Yeah. Okay, but Esau's trying to improve his decisions as far as wives go, I guess. Heading on then. All right. Verse 10. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran, heading up north again now, way up in Mesopotamia area. We've seen this, shown this on the map a number of times. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Now, if you didn't know, all angels have blonde hair and wear white robes. Now, I don't know what they look like, but anyway, I like this picture. It gives you this idea that, okay, this procession of angels coming up and down from heaven is what he's dreaming about. And it's really interesting to try to figure out really what is this about? What do you think? Why did he see this going on? What's your opinion? Why would God show him this? Mike.
I believe it was a foreshadowing of Christ. Jesus himself making reference in John chapter 1, verse 51. And you still, you know, if you're telling Nathaniel, don't be amazed at this, for you shall see the heavens open and the angel ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Mm-hmm. So that ladder was actually a foreshadowing of Christ mm-hmm. and the access that he would in a later time provide for man.
Okay, that's possible. That's definitely possible. I think might be more general than that. But let's see what he says, at least, or what happens at this occasion. Here's what goes on in his dream. He says, "And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father, and God and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south, and in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." Any other opinions? Why this vision? Why this dream? Call it a vision within a dream. Mike said something that's very possible. My thinking is, against opinion, is that I've given you these promises, and I've given these same promises to Isaac, and I've given these same promises to Abraham, and look and see, I'm able to accomplish this. Look at this host of heavenly, powerful heavenly beings that come up and come down and do my, and serve me and accomplish the things that I want them to do. So maybe, again, my opinion, it's just that it's reassuring Jacob that this is God's power with you and will accomplish his promises. I don't know. It doesn't give a reason. Florento, got you, that was your hand I saw. Florento?
Yeah. It's just the Lord. It says, "I am the Lord your God,
mm-hmm.
and God of Abraham and your father, and the God of Isaac." And so. The Lord blessed Jacob simply because he was a grandson.
Hmm.
Are we talking about generational blessings?
To a great deal, we are. But we'll see in just a minute that Jacob, he's also going to agree to be faithful to God and to do his will. So here he is blessing him because a number of times we'll see he's blessed Isaac and Jacob because Abraham was faithful and obeyed my voice.
But to be a grandson and expect to be blessed by the Lord simply because of the nuances of religious relationship of your descendants. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me. You need to have a personal relationship with the Lord.
Well, yes, you need to have. I mean, you need to be somebody who's faithful to God too. So, and that's such a good point. There are two passages I think of, and I'm not going to be able to call them to mind. Maybe somebody can. One that talks about the circumstances of that we're not guilty for our parents' sins. Each one will be judged. I think that's in Ecclesiastes. But there's another one that says that God will visit upon the next generations the trouble that the parents started, basically. I mean, the sins that they've committed. So as parents, the way we behave and the way we trust God does affect our children and our children's children. And I think I can see it in my household, the good things and the bad things, how they affect, you know, my family. So, yeah, I might want to bring that up next week. I wasn't prepared to answer that question. Those two passages would be good. We might come back here and look at that, Florento, and talk about that a bit more. But in this particular case, God's got a plan. He's going to bless this nation he's created from Abraham's children through Isaac and through Jacob and make a great nation of him. And again, the reason for the vision here, I can't be sure at all, but I think that's why he's giving him this time. Now, oops, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, no, here you go. Here's the thought that actually Andrew had in his notes, I noticed. He said this is something similar, he thinks, to this event that happened during the time of Elisha, that basically God is working and helping us all the time. We just don't see all these things going on. He allowed Jacob to see this ladder with the angels going up. This is God serving his people. And here's an example of something similar at Elisha's time. And let me see what was going on at the time here. This was during when King Aram sent out an army to destroy Elisha, the prophet, God's prophet. So we're getting just a little bits and pieces of here. But here's just an example of what's going on behind the scenes that we don't see. In verse 15 of 2 Kings 6, it says, "Now when the attendant of the man of the God had risen early and gone out, and behold, an army with horses and chariots was circling the city, and his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?'" So here's this army coming after Elisha. I mean, he sent an army after Elisha. And the servant sees this going on, and, you know, we don't have any hope. Can I finish? Let me finish the verse here, and we'll get to Bill. As he says, so he answered. So Elisha said, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Then Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord, I pray, open his eyes," that is the servant, "that he may see." Open his eyes that he may see. Open my eyes that I may see. That sounds like a song that we sing. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw, and behold, the mountains was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Wow. When they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people with blindness, I pray." So he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Just one example of the heavenly host God is sending to do his purpose. And in this case, Elisha was the only one who could see it because he was God's prophet that had these abilities. But the servant then was allowed to see what was going on. So, yeah, Bill, back there. You got something to say?
10 minutes later. the verse that you were looking for about the father not inheriting the son's sins or the son inheriting the father's sin is in Ezekiel 18:20. Okay. It says, "The person who sins will die. The son will not bear the punishment of the father's iniquity, nor the father bear the punishment of the son's iniquity. The righteous of the righteousness will be upon himself, and the wicked of the wicked will be upon himself."
So we're judged based upon what we do.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But there's another passage, I'm sorry, I can't think of it, that talks about visiting the sins of the father on the second and third generation. So as much as we're not accountable for our soul other than what we do, doesn't matter what our parents do, still there's consequences from what your parents do or what you do that affect next generations. And if we can't find that verse this morning, I'll bring it next week. Dorothy.
One of the things, going back to what you just were talking about in this particular passage, a takeaway is waiting on the Lord. But we as humans have a hard time understanding what that waiting is. You know, as Christians, and I'm assuming as this man did, you know, it's like you're looking at it in human terms and you're saying, what do we do now? And if you
wait.
Have...
No, what? Go ahead. No, I said wait. Go ahead.
And that's it. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but a lot of times I do what I can until I can no longer do anymore.
Yeah.
And then we wait. Because a lot of times when we do what we think we know is the right thing to do, it turns out most of the time not to be.
Sometimes, yeah.
And then waiting on the Lord, when it does happen, it is just so comforting and so awe-inspiring that you just can't help but know that there's a God out there watching over us daily.
Yes. And I think one of the greatest reasons we have these lessons in the Old Testament and why we should study them is because we see example after example of just that, waiting on the Lord. Mike.
The reference you sought was Exodus 20, verses 5 and 6, which states, "You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments."
Okay, now we're not going to get into too much of a discussion. That's a difficult passage. We read on the one hand, we're going to be judged for our own actions, right? Not going to be judged for if my dad was a murderer. It has no effect on me whether I'm saved. But does my dad being a murderer have effect on me in other ways, possibly, that might affect my circumstances? He certainly can. And so those troubles can follow. And I think that's what that passage is talking about. So Florento's original comment and question there is that, he's going to hold Jacob accountable for his soul for his actions and judge him for those things. But because of how faithful Abraham was, these blessings have come down now to his children, too. Okay, another passage about the angels here. We talked about the one with Elisha, and just another insight here in Matthew 18:10. Here Jesus is referring to what I think is new Christians or young disciples as if they were children. You look in the previous chapter or previous verses. He's talking about them like they're little children, because in so many ways new Christians are. Or new disciples. And he says, "Take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I say to you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." Now, wow, a passage always kind of amazes me is that, we've got always young Christians, people obeying the gospel, and their souls are delicate, and boy, they're just, the world is out there, and how are they going to survive? And they have us, sure, to encourage them, but they have these angels that God has placed somehow to guard over them and watch over them and keep them in a place where they won't succumb to the world or helping them in their new faith. So we don't know how angels work because we can't see them. We're like that servant of Elisha. We don't see this all going on, but they're there. Probably here this morning. I don't know. Sitting next to Mike there or something like that. Who knows what they're doing? We don't know. But as Dorothy points out, just trust the Lord. Wait on him. He's working. And so I don't know the reason for the angels here at this time with Jacob. My understanding is it's something that helps him see that God is with him. And we're going to see example after example. This is the case. Now, his conclusion here is, the next few verses, and Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone he put at his head, and he set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of the city had been Luz previously. Bethel is, El is for Elohim or God, and Beth is for house, so the house of God. So, again, was it particularly something about this place? Jacob thought it was something about this place. This is where God comes and goes with his angels up to heaven, gateway to heaven. Maybe he knew that was the case, or maybe that was his opinion. This is the house of God. He set up a stone here. This is at least where I had this vision, this dream that showed me that God's in heaven. He's got his angels coming and going. Over in Psalm 22, verse 6, David says, "Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So he knows that's not an earthly house, talking about God's heavenly house that he's going to dwell in. And this is what I think Jacob is alluding to. This is the gateway to the house of God, is what I'm thinking here. Again, hard to know whether that's the place that made the difference. This was at least the time that God revealed this to Jacob. Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, and in that statement by Jacob is another allusion to Jesus, who in John 10 said, "I am the door, I'm the way, I'm the gate into the sheepfold."
Right.
So there's another connection there.
Yeah, definitely. He certainly is the way into the heaven and the way to God. Okay. So, verse 20, "Then Jacob made a vow, saying, 'If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God.'" That kind of sounds like he's making a bargain. I don't really think that's what he's in. The language may be a bit like, "Okay, God, if you'll do this, then I'll be faithful. But if you don't, then I'm going to do whatever I want." I think it's more like a sense. Since you're going to be faithful like this, you're going to be wonderful blessings. I'm going to show my faith and my commitment to you and serve you and do what's right in your sight. "And this stone which I have set up as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." So again, that's kind of my thinking here. He sets this up, marks this place, remembers this event, and he's committed to serving God because God is so gracious and so good. Florento. Hold on for a second. Microphone's coming.
The verses that follows, where it says, "Then Jacob made a vow, saying, 'If God will be with me and keep me, then I am going and give the bread to eat and clothes to put on.'" I can't see. I'm sorry.
Okay.
to me, if you read between the lines in those scriptures, it's descriptive of how a man Jacob is, because of how he said it. Is it, "If God will give me," and then "if" and "if" and all that. He sounded like he's making a bargain.
But it does sound like that on the surface.
But I don't think he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he is a man who is not too learned. He's not well learned. You know, perhaps maybe he's naive because how his mother so easily convinced him of how his mother did. I think what he's saying is that, in a way, in those verses, I think Jacob was saying, no matter what, I will pledge my love to you, and I will serve you. I think that's the conclusion of those verses.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. just saying.
Sure, I got you. That's why we're looking at this together. I think, my thinking is that he says, you know, you're faithful, I'll be faithful. You know, I'll do, you're faithful to me and will do good to me, I will be good to you and serve you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the thing that got me is because of how he said it.
I know. Me too. It seems a little funny. At least in the way we use the word if. I didn't go back and look at all the different ways if can be used, but I think this is more of a sense type if, that you've said this, and because of that, I'm going to be faithful. Let me say something about this. This is the first time we see, he says, God, he says here in verse 22, and this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. First time we see the mention of a tenth or a tithe, as it's often going to be called, as we get later on in the Old Testament. There was occasion where Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth, but that was to Melchizedek. When we read about him and his meeting up with Melchizedek, king of Salem. But this is the first time we read about someone giving a tenth. Don't see any commandments here about it. Later on, we'll see in Leviticus and so on, the laws about giving a tenth of certain things to the Lord. But anyway, just something to notice. Okay, moving ahead, chapter 29. Jacob marries Leah and Rachel. He got more than he bargained for here on this one, as we look here. Okay, a lot happens in chapter 29. Let's go ahead. So Jacob went on his journey, leaving now Bethel, where he's had this vision, and he came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. Out of that well, they watered their flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" So he's met these shepherds here that are all waiting to water their sheep. And they said, "We are from Haran." That's where his destination was. Then he said to them, Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "Look, it is still high day." This is now, Jacob talking. "It is not time for the cattle to be gathered. Water the sheep and go and feed them." I think he's saying, okay, there's a certain way. First the sheep come in, they get watered, then the cattle come in. They get watered, so go ahead and water your sheep and then go feed them. But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now, whether they were wimpy guys and couldn't move the stone, in just a minute, Jacob rolls it away himself, apparently, or whether it was just a convention. We have to wait until everybody's here and we all agree we're not going to, you know, one person's not going to take all the water and water their sheep. We share it. Lee, you had a point? Nathan, up here? Hold on a second. Which it could have been. It could have been they had it on there so thieves wouldn't come in and steal the water. There's a whole bunch of reasons you can think of. What do you think?
My guess is that these were young lads, probably did not have the strength to move that stone.
Often young men were shepherds.
Wait till the older shepherds got there to do it.
Got it. That could be. That could be it. Could be just that reason. Doesn't say, but they were waiting for the stone to be rolled away. Okay. Now, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. So we learned that about her. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth. We're not waiting for anybody now. This pretty girl's shown up, basically. As somebody who I've been coming to meet, actually, he's thinking. rolled a stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. I'm assuming this wasn't a romantic kiss. We'll see in just a minute that Rachel's father kisses Jacob too. So it's likely a convention of greeting, which often is the case in the Middle East. So kissed her and then raised up his voice and wept. He must have known this is the woman. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Let's look at this chart again really quickly. We've looked at this one before when we've talked about Isaac marrying Rebekah. And we look here, Abraham on the right with his three brothers laid out there, Nahor and Haran. Haran died a long time ago. But Isaac went and took what was, I think, his first cousin once removed. Is that what we decided? That Rebekah was, and that was his wife. And now we've got Jacob here marrying somebody that would have been like his third cousin so many times. I mean, it was a bit down the road there. And this is the connection now with the family. And this is why, of course, Isaac sent him back to someone. These people are still very spiritual people. They might have some challenges as far as images or idols go. We'll see that in just a minute, but we'll look at that. But they apparently were respected Jehovah. So that's who he's met up with here now, Rachel. Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. So told him, listen, here's a story about where I've come from. And Laban said to him, surely you are bone, excuse me, bone of my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? So here it is. He's been staying there a month. I guess he's been helping out, working on with the flocks or whatever. He said, well, isn't right that you work here for free. What can I give you? What can I pay you? Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, or most translations say weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. So a very beautiful woman. Leah, not so much. Just the way it was, okay? Moving on, verse 19. Now Jacob loved Rachel. He's the one he wanted. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. I mean, I would have said maybe a year, but 7 years. Wow. I mean, that's pretty amazing. it's kind of interesting here. When Abraham, I'm trying to get Isaac and Abraham in one word. When Abraham sent his servant out to find Rebekah, who was giving the gifts then? It was Abraham, remember? Abraham's servant who put on the jewelry on Rebekah and gave the family jewels and things. Here it's working the other way. It's like, okay, if you want my daughter, you know, then what should your wages, if you want to serve me, you should, and this is what he wanted, and this is what he's willing to give. Okay, so kind of working the other way around. A dowry, how do you say that? Dowry was common in these times, but sometimes it went one way and sometimes the other. It's really kind of interesting. There's some examples of that. Only a few in the scriptures. Mostly it was from the man giving something to the father of the bride. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and it seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Just like you and me, Sue. Though I didn't serve 7 years. Though I would have. I hope I would have anyway. Sure I would. This guy was really in love with this woman, and it seemed like nothing, just a few days to go through. And he waited 7 years before he got married. We're at the end of our time, but Mike, what you got?
Well, we see how out of order we have things in our present day with the confusion that exists over gender. back then it was understood that if a man wanted to be able to generate another generation of his people, mm-hmm. he needed a wife. And a wife was one gender. That's a woman.
Yeah.
And so,
pretty plain.
You know, when we talk, we hear people talking about how women are so much better off today. Well, when was the last time you heard of someone paying such a precious price for his bride?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty unique.
Yeah.
Okay, we're out of our time. Thank you for your participation, and come back next week, and we'll go on and see what happens. This is a, like Bill was saying, Jacob gets his just returns as far as the whole deception thing.